Welcome to the Joy of Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Taylor. On this podcast, we explore the passion and purpose of leadership. Join us to explore lessons in leadership that demonstrate how you can live in the center of God's will. All right, on the show today, we have Drs. Randy and Destiny Prezzano. We're glad to have you guys on the show.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Good friends and a board member and parents here at HCA with a cool story. Both of you guys owning a veterinarian clinic together right across the street. And so we're excited to be neighbors here as well. On the show, we talk a lot about the idea of just what prepares people or what kind of was the motivation for the pursuit of your career path. What that looks like. I tend to take it back pretty early. Like I know, Randy, on the notes that I had, you were working in kennels even in high school.
Yes, sir.
So take me back to kind of the very beginning. Like when did you know you wanted to be a veterinarian? And what was kind of the motivation for that early?
Let me go ahead and start.
Yeah, go ahead.
So for me, I really feel blessed that I knew really early on. Kind of grew up in a very rural setting and had lots of animals around, livestock, dogs, cats, pets, chickens, all sorts of fun stuff. Mm. And I can remember very clearly in my mind the day and the moment we had a goat, and her name was Lily. We were playing, and this goat followed me all over the place. Mm. And she got her leg caught in a stone wall and broke her leg. And so my parents packed her up in our little station wagon, and off we went to the veterinary hospital, and I saw them splint her leg and take an x-ray, and I knew right then and there that was it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How old were you at that point?
I was seven.
You were seven years old.
I was very, very young, and I can clearly see it.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was really
now,
cool.
Now, did you grow up on a farm, or was it more
it
just like...
It was small, like a hobby farm.
Okay, like a hobby farm. Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. Well, that is really young.
Yeah, so I really feel very blessed to have been able to do this.
Okay.
You know, and to know from early on... That was kind of my goal.
Very cool. Destiny, how about for you?
Very similar. I was that five-year-old that never changed her mind.
No kidding.
Going to the vet with, it was just my dog, but loved going there and everything that they did. I was the kid in the neighborhood that brought all the loose dogs back home and just always had love for animals.
Okay. That is wild. We always do this thing with lower school when the kids are graduating from kindergarten. They put their picture up and it always says what they want to do when they grow up. And there's always going to be about 30 or 35 veterinarians in there. Like there will be, absolutely. There'll be an astronaut. We actually had a few kids this last year who wanted to be YouTubers, which I thought that's kind of a brand new goal. But there's always some veterinarians in there.
Our
for
children
sure.
all wanted to be veterinarians in kindergarten.
But okay. Now none of them want anything to do with
they've
it.
Changed.
I was actually going to ask that whether any of the kids want to go into that business.
At the present time, none.
Really?
None of the three. Yeah.
Nothing medical at all.
Yeah. Huh. They've seen the business side of it, maybe.
Yeah, probably some of the other things, too.
Okay.
I think they just have different interests. Like, the boys really, they want to be engineers. Taylor wants to do business, potentially international business. But who knows? There's time. They can change their mind.
Very cool. All right, so let's look at that from the kindergartner's perspective. All of your kids wanted to be veterinarians. Now none of them do. So what is it that allowed you guys both to kind of drive that right to taking place, like really coming to fruition?
I think you have to love science. You have to love school. You have to enjoy the math and the science and, you know, all the academics behind that love for animals as well. And I think that a lot of students find that that's not their passion, and doing that for eight more years you know, they graduate from high school is not a path they want to take.
They love animals, but they don't necessarily love the science behind what you have to do for this craft. Okay. Yes. Randy, any ideas there?
Yeah, no, I'd agree wholeheartedly. I think there's a lot of people that get into the rigor of having to deal with the science and even the mathematics, and they just decide that, hey, their passion lies here, and they can still have that passion for animals and pets, but maybe not in this capacity.
So when we look at kind of the seven-year-old Randy and the five-year-old Destiny, you get this idea that you want to be that person, just like a lot of our kindergartners here, you know, just like a lot of our younger kids. Were there things that you then put into practice to really make sure that dream actually came to fruition, like from an early age, junior high, high school? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I was very active in 4-H,
okay.
So I had a lot of extracurricular activities surrounding agriculture, surrounding animal care and husbandry. Then going off to college, I mean, I had a pretty clear goal of what courses I was going to need, and so I was really, you know, following a straight and narrow path as far as, hey, these are the prerequisites, this is what I'm going to do.
Okay.
So much so that I was accepted into veterinary school without my bachelor's degree.
No kidding.
Yeah, because I was taking courses specifically to go to veterinary school, and I got into veterinary school, and I never went back. I think I have a writing class and an economics class that I would need to finish.
Can you still do that today?
I have not looked into it in a long time.
I mean, I've been told by so many people that getting into veterinarian school is literally harder than getting into med school at this point in time. I mean,
it is getting a little easier, I think, because they're opening more spots.
Okay.
You know, schools have went from 70 to 80 spots per year. Now most schools are at 125 to 150 spots, plus I don't know how many new schools have opened.
But there's
six new schools that have opened in the past 20 years. Okay. So it is easier.
Destiny, were you doing things preparing for it, junior high, high school?
I feel like for me it was more academic and just trying to build a good college resume so that I could get into the programs I wanted. But as soon as I was 16, I was working for a vet, you know, all the way through.
Okay. And you did a BA in or a BS, I guess, would be in animal science, right?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then went into veterinary school after that. Okay. Now, both of you guys are not from this area. Randy, you are from the Hudson River area, right?
Correct. In New York.
In New York.
Yes, sir.
And you're from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Correct.
You came down south while you were still in high school, though, right? But you came down for college?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I realized I couldn't afford college in New York.
Okay.
And it was so much less expensive.
No kidding. So the SUNY system was that much, that much different.
Yeah. If memory serves, and this is a long time ago, but I started college, it was about $45 a credit hour. And when I started in Florida, I think it was maybe 20
a
credit
goodness.
Hour. So it was significantly less expensive.
Now, you had already moved from Pennsylvania down to Florida. Right, had you determined Florida was going to be your place long before then?
No, I mean, honestly, Ohio State was where I thought I would go when I lived in Pennsylvania, but it was a blessing to be in Florida. University of Florida was a great experience, and it was a lot less money.
Okay. Did y'all meet there?
Yes.
We did.
You did. Okay, so you were there the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. That's awesome. Tell us about, as far as preparation for kids, like, are there certain courses that they should be taking? Are there, like, and even the idea of, like, providing advice on kind of where you'd go with things, that type of advice. Love to hear that.
I'll let you take that.
I think that the main thing is to get into a veterinary hospital and actually see what the day looks like, because I've had externs come in. I've even had freshman veterinary students come in, and it just isn't what they thought it was going to be.
Mm.
I've had a number of my classmates that dropped out that freshman year. It wasn't what they thought it would be. So before you put all that time and investment into it, I think it's good to know what that role really is. You know, whether that's going to be doing beef cattle or working in a small animal practice, working in a zoo, go get some exposure so that you're sure that's what you want.
Hmm. Randy, any advice there?
No, I think that's perfect. I think to really know exactly what the job encompasses, which can be a challenge, right? Our degree allows us to do so many different things,
right,
from food inspection on to poultry medicine, exotic medicine, zoo medicine, dogs and cats. So
I hadn't even thought of that. You can actually take that degree and go anywhere with it.
Yes. Yeah, her or I, we could step into a job with the USDA tomorrow. Not that we would or be qualified for that, but that's the requirement. Their degree requirement is a DVM.
That is wild. Now, both of you served in other veterinary clinics for years. Tell us a little bit about that experience and kind of what you gained from that. We're kind of going Destiny to Randy, but whoever, go ahead.
So,
Randy.
I mean, I started working in a small animal veterinary hospital, cleaning kennels, cleaning dishes, cleaning floors. So I was there. School got done at 2:30. I was there from 3 till 6, probably 4 to 5 days a week.
Were you already married? Were you guys already married?
Oh, no. In high school.
In high school. Okay.
You know, and kind of worked my way all the way through college, kind of doing that stuff and increased skill level. After graduating veterinary school, Destiny had not yet gotten in. She graduated 4 years after I did. So I went and worked, and then she got into veterinary school. But since she graduated, we've always worked together.
Okay. That's one of the questions too. So, was it always your plan? You guys met each other at University of Florida. Was it always your plan to start your own business?
It was never mine.
Really? Okay.
It was never mine. It was one of those marriage compromises as far as doing general practice and then eventually purchasing our own practice.
What did you want to do?
Residency and kind of specialize, but, you know, that's a long path.
Right.
And so to be able to have children and really start our family at a reasonable time, we needed to be able to do general practice and not have another 4+ years in a residency.
Right. And so you wanted to go the kind of the surgical route.
Surgical or critical care, you know, just a specialty.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. But you, Randy, you had always wanted to do
I'd
that?
Always wanted to do general practice.
Okay.
I had never had any inkling towards any
what brought? How does that work in that situation? Like, how did you guys come to Decula? Did you come here just for the purchasing of that company? Of that, you know, like, how does that work?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this was a really cool God story. We were looking at the North Atlanta to Virginia area. And it was in 2010, 2011, where the economy really wasn't good. A lot of the practices that were being sold, there was a lot of just kind of not so great practices that were failing, you know, small, tiny, tiny clinics that weren't succeeding. And so trying to find a practice that could support the two of us was a challenge. We had talked to multiple different large practice brokers. There was nothing. Literally bumped into somebody from a brokerage called the Business House, had never heard of them before, and asked me what I was looking for, and, you know, kind of piece by piece went through what we had for criteria. He pulls out this paper, line by line, it was exactly what we were looking
for.
No
kidding.
It was really cool.
Okay.
And so we came up, saw the practice. Decula was perfect fit for what we wanted. I wanted some level of suburbia. Randy wanted small town, wanted to be close to a city, and couldn't have asked for better.
That's great.
Yeah, we had almost given up on looking.
No kidding.
Because we were beating all the bushes and nothing was coming up that would fit our needs.
And North Atlanta to Virginia, that's a pretty broad span. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a, you know, was it ever a consideration to head back to either Erie, Pennsylvania or New York?
No.
Well, we did go. She looked at an internship
in
Connecticut.
That was a few years before.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got off the plane, and it was a small airport, and you had to walk down the stairs, right?
Okay.
As soon as we got to the door, a blast of cold hit us.
-7 was the high.
Oh, no.
We looked at each other and said, no, we're not Southerners.
Yeah. I said, when I grew growing up in Canada, winter was always my favorite season of the whole year. I love skiing. I love snowmobiling. I love cold. But my wife hates it. So, and I love her more than I love winter. So that's why we're living in the South, you know? So, all right. So now let me get to that question. So how is it working with your spouse? I happen to have done that for like pretty much my entire career. But tell me about how that is. I know that Karen and I hear from people on a regular basis, like, I don't know how you could do that. So how does it work for you guys?
It's really not that tough. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we're not necessarily together all day.
Right.
I mean, much like you and Karen,
right.
You know, you have your own agenda for the day, you're doing your own work, and, you know, sometimes that collides and, you know, you have conversation about it, and other times you probably have no idea what she's done all day and, you know, vice versa. So even though we're in a 7,000-square-foot building and we're passing each other all day, it's not like we're necessarily working together
right.
on most of those cases.
Okay.
There is some collaboration.
Right. Right.
And that's the best part, I think, is the collaboration that she and I have in our practice is we both come at things from sometimes very, very different angles. And we've each got our own unique ideas and ways to attack a problem. And, you know, we can find the middle ground oftentimes.
You guys have set up a great business. I mean, it really is just a super professional. It's big enough but small enough where you really do feel like, you know, you're customers, they're really known. Both of my dogs go there. I'm sorry for Charlie. I know that Charlie's my special crazy
he's just
dog.
Fine.
But my dogs are nuts. They're fairly misbehaved, I think, sometimes when they're outside of our home. But you guys do a phenomenal job with that.
Thank you very much. I mean, one of the hardest parts, I think, especially when we first started working together, was having time off together.
Okay.
That was the biggest challenge because, I mean, her
one
and
doc
I,
had to stay on.
Oftentimes,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys have more doctors there?
We have three others.
You have three others. So really, you're up to five there. Holy cow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we've really grown. So it's easier now, you know, at this point that we can get away together.
Now, tell me about kind of the business model. Have you changed that business model a lot since you got there? I mean, they didn't used to have five, I'm gathering.
No, I mean, from a business model perspective, we've just grown kind of the same model, but just increased in size. Right. So we really had a great first practice that we were at, well, for him, second practice. And Dr. Kelly Culbertson was our mentor and just did a fantastic job with his practice. And so a lot of our practice philosophy came from that practice.
Do you have plans to grow even past where you're at here? Is that something that you guys discuss?
We talk about a second location. We'll see.
Really? Okay. But that's something you're considering.
Mm-hmm. Would have to be the right opportunity. Okay. If it pops in, you know, we may jump on it.
Okay. Geographically, like, do you want to be in a similar location or do you want to have that covering something closer to Atlanta?
Probably commutable, because one of us would be there.
Okay,
initially.
So you would still share the role there. Okay, very interesting. And the boarding is a huge component. Is that of every practice, or is that only the larger practices?
Usually just the larger practices.
Okay, because and I would imagine that's quite a lucrative component to the business model.
It certainly adds income. It's honestly more of a service for our clients than it is necessarily part of the business plan.
Okay, very interesting. Now, knowing both of you guys personally, how do you have the opportunities to apply your faith in your settings as well? In the actual clinic, but you know, in your business practice as well. How do you get to apply faith?
So I think that the easy answer for me is with what we do. We see people at very vulnerable times. You know, the end of life discussion with your pet is a difficult discussion. And I think that that's one place that I really impart my faith. Mm-hmm. I try and let people know that, hey, it says right there in the beginning of Genesis that they're the caregivers mm-hmm. of these animals, right? And so we're in charge
right,
of them.
To be stewards,
and,
yeah.
And I think there's other places in the Bible. You know, I know in Job, one of the things when he's going and talking about all these heathens, you know, and one of the lines, and I'm sorry, I forget the verse, but it's, well, what about the animals,
right?
You know, and so God cares about the animals, and so I do try and impart that to people that, hey, we're caring for them as the last thing you can do for them is to let them be uncomfortable,
right?
You know, and secondly, just in the way that we act when we're there, I think that's a big component for our staff to see how Destiny and I act with each other and with other people.
Right. What do you think, Destiny?
I probably go to 1 Corinthians 10:31. You know, and it's, you know, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. And so I really do, you know, try as a business owner, as a woman in the community, make sure that everything that we're doing is bringing glory to Him. Mm-hmm. So that's being ethical. It's being honorable in what we do, treating our staff well, treating our clients well, all of those things. So I think it's, you know, being able to see how we're living our lives.
We talk a lot on the show about the idea of having a calling versus merely having a job. Do you guys feel like this is your calling?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, in the way that I've always interacted with you guys, it would seem like it. How do you then apply that same kind of spiritual calling? Desi and I know that the last little while you've really jumped in on teaching some classes with other ladies, but how do you then take that calling and apply it to your personal life as well? I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit about that. I know you felt a real sense of calling to be doing some teaching in the last little while on a personal level.
Yeah, so we've been doing a Bible study and just kind of learning a little bit more about historical and cultural significance in the Bible, which has been great. I just feel like, you know, anytime the Lord puts something on my heart, I need to move forward in obedience. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like He put that on my heart to, you know, dive in a little bit deeper. And one of the ladies didn't want to lead anymore and was ready for me to step into that role. And I've really enjoyed it.
Are there particular topics that tend to resonate with you more? You've dug deep. I mean, you have not done, you've not done surfacey stuff.
I don't know. Just, you know, kind of understanding the cultural significance behind some of the verses.
Okay.
And realizing why, you know, why certain things were more significant than others.
Right.
You know, I kind of go back to like the deformation when Peter took the sword to the soldier's ear. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot more to that. So right. It just has been interesting to get to learn more pieces of why some of these things are in the Bible, like why that was an important enough moment that that's what was included.
Okay. Randy?
You know, I don't maybe dig as deeply as Destiny does into a lot of this stuff. I really think that God has put me with this woman mm-hmm. to drag me along, kicking and screaming, and pull me out
we
of my
both married
zone.
Up, Randy. We yes. both married up, yeah.
You know, because for me, I'm very quiet, very conservative. Right. I probably would not be a group leader of right. anything. Even going out to dinner with another couple is challenging for me, but she drags me along kicking and screaming. And so I don't have a great calling outside of,
but exhibiting just that idea of what a godly and spiritual leader is.
Yes.
That makes a powerful and strong statement. Yeah. It really does. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I know that you never miss with us on Friday mornings mm-hmm. with our men's group. And just honestly, that example is powerful.
Sure.
Just to be able to see other guys who are really making that decision to place Christ first and be able to live that out is something that's increasingly rare in today's day and age. It just is, you know. So, all right, let me take it back to the kids just for a minute. Advice for seniors in high school, whether they're going into veterinary science or not. But advice for seniors in high school as far as pursuing their calling, maybe even we say finding their calling and then pursuing their calling, what would be some hands-on advice that you guys have learned through your years of practice, but also just your years of kind of calling and experience?
I think that whatever career path they choose, they have to enjoy it even without a paycheck. Like, it has to be something that they enjoy enough that if they were only a volunteer the rest of their life, they could still go to work. And I think that will really narrow down what their true calling mm-hmm. is or what their path should be. And then they need to build a resume around that. So, you know, whether it be volunteer hours or community service that pertains to that, as well as the academics, to really make themselves a strong candidate so they can continue to set themselves apart as they're looking for those specific opportunities as they're trying to get into the program, during the program, if they're looking at business, so they are set apart from some of the other business students, and they're chosen for those roles that God can really use them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely second that sentiment wholeheartedly. I think that they need to find their passion, find out what they really want to do, and then the financial component will find its way to you, right?
Right.
If you're performing in a godly manner, in a fair and honest manner, the financial component comes along secondarily.
I frankly love that about this current generation, because very much I would say with our generation, I think I'm probably a little bit older than you guys, but our generation and the generation before us, I think you kind of worked to live, you know, mm-hmm. and these kids kind of want the opposite of that. And so it's that mindset where they want to find something that they're going to be passionate about. I think about, and I would suspect you guys have friends as well, who kind of have a countdown to retirement. You know, I've got a couple friends I could call right now on the phone, and they'll tell me down, I mean, really, they'll look at their watch and tell me down to the minute of how many years, how many months, how many days. And I think, I mean, what an awful way to live. You know, I look at that, I think, oh my goodness, that sounds horrible. Like, I literally 99 out of 100 days, I can't wait to come into work in the morning. Like, I'm looking forward to the day. I'm looking forward to the challenges of what that day has. And boy, that's the way to pursue it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know? So just that idea of finding something you do for free and then finding somebody to pay you for it. I think Jack Nicklaus, the golfer, had said that, you know? And I frankly love that adage. Any other advice for students? Like, as far as, you know, I know that sometimes kids will have high dreams, but their efforts in their high school years have limited those dreams a little bit, you know?
Well, I think that is an important piece, is to, you know, shoot for the stars, quite literally, as far as academics go, so that they're not closing opportunities that they may later really want to have.
Right.
So I think that's important. I think also being financially sound in their decision making, whether it be, you know, going out of state or whatever that might be, that's a really big price tag, and then you're going to come out and make not so much money. You have to make sure the financials make sense at the front end.
That's right. That's right. My first school was in Boston, and we had a ton of kids who would go off to Ivy League schools, you know, and which I would, you know, I was all for, you know, but they're going to go off to an Ivy League school not coming from a wealthy family. And they're going to study to be an elementary school teacher or a social worker, you know. Right. And I always say, like, don't go there for that. You know, if you're going to spend $85,000 a year and come out making $40,000, that's going to be a real challenge, you know. And so to be wise on those things with both of our kids, you know, they had a lot of other opportunities, but they chose great schools, but schools that were reasonably priced, you know, so that they could really, they weren't going to be really hampered for what the future would hold, you know. So that's a huge component of it. You know, anything else?
I think that for these young people to surround themselves with people who can share in their dreams
Great
and
advice.
Share in their visions.
Great advice.
But also hold them accountable.
Right.
So that they push them to perform at the highest level that they're capable of.
That's right.
And understand that, hey, things aren't just going to be handed to
that's
you.
That's right.
You know, and I think if you have those people around you pouring into you, that's you can't, it's fantastic people to have there with you.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. Well, guys, thank you so much for jumping on the show today.
Oh, our pleasure.
Just really discussing that idea of calling. The idea of business acumen are such an important piece. And then just the idea of how to pursue your dreams, like, and really to make sure that those steps matter with the efforts that you're putting in on the front end. So thank you both for jumping in, and thanks for being a part of this community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joy of Leadership podcast. Living in the center of God's will is a rare blessing in today's day and age. Help us share this vital story of passionate leadership. If you would like to comment on the show, or if you know someone who would be a perfect guest, contact us at thejoyofleadership@gmail.com. If you like the show and don't want to miss a single episode, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.